This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and in studio is Mary Patricia Ray of Top Drawer Strategy. She is involved in politics of all kinds, issues and candidates, and helped John Bel Edwards get elected to the governorship in 2015. She was on the JBE train back in 2013 when he announced his candidacy on this program, and she joined forces that day, I think. Is that correct?
I had another employment at that time, officially.
You talked that day. You talked.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I was very excited that day. So were a lot of people, including the two women that you've mentioned are running for chair. Both were very excited.
And we're going to get to that. But Mary Patricia is a warrior in the COVID age. She just had a baby 12 days ago. You look fabulous.
And Thank you. I'm working hard at it, Jim.
You did the natural way, right?
Oh, I ended up with no epidural with the second baby, second time. But I did need a little chemical assistance, some Pitocin to move things along, which made the no epidural even more challenging. Mm-hmm. But we have some great midwives here in Baton Rouge. And without them, I never would have been able to do it the way that I wanted to do it. That's kind of what we hope everybody gets to do, is do it their way, whatever that looks like. So it was great.
And this was at home?
No, sir. Very much in the hospital with the Pitocin. We started out at the birth center of Baton Rouge, which is right by the Woman's Hospital. And I have to give them a shout out. They're doing some great work, which I think we'll be able to announce on the show soon, to make sure that we do a lot of work on birth equity, like I was talking about. But I couldn't finish the birth there because I needed the extra drugs to convince my 9-pound, 7-ounce baby to come on out.
And you've gone through this on Facebook, I believe. I know I've seen it somewhere. You were in kind of an unusual position when the baby actually
came into the world, right? A really great and normal position. It's just that if you have had an epidural, you typically can't deliver your baby in any other position other than kind of like on your back, which isn't a very helpful position, frankly, when you're you need gravity's help to do the heavy work.
Okay. 877-217-5757. Natural childbirth, or very close to it. I think that qualifies as natural childbirth.
Unmedicated, I'll say that.
Yeah, you know, the other day, I went to my dentist and I had my first cavity in 20 years, and I told him I didn't want any Novocaine.
Did you feel like a total like flunky? I'm a very like type A competitive person, so if I have a cavity, I feel like no, I failed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a long story about how I got it, but it's the last tooth on the lower side, and he said, you know, I can see you floss 4 or 5 times a day, which is correct, but he says, you're missing that back side. But anyway, I did it without Novocaine, thought I was a tough guy, but...
That's pretty tough. Any dental procedure with no Novocaine.
Well, anyway, but what you did is really tough, and guys who think they're tough should try childbirth sometime.
I think we'd be a much smaller human race if that were the case, Jim.
Okay, well... We've got this battle for the party leadership, and there's an election in 61 days, and really the party is a ship without a rudder right now, and two very qualified females, which is good, Linda Woolard, New Orleans, Katie Bernhardt from Lafayette. They are vying, and as I talked with Dylan Wagasback earlier, Linda is viewed as the progressive wing's choice, and Katie as the moderate wing's choice. Is that a fair assessment?
You know, I will not speak for the members of the party that are really truly invested in this election. Some people who I think would covet that sort of party flack, party hack label, you know, the ones that are really involved on the day to day. I see it from the candidate's perspective, and I've worked for many candidates that happen to be Democrats, some who happen to be Republicans in Louisiana. And I think from the candidate's perspective, we really want some access to resources, transparency, and support, even when the candidates' positions don't line up with maybe those D.C. Beltway talking points. And I think that's why you're seeing a large rural-urban split probably among these DSCC members. But I think, you know, we're going to have a healthy... It's been a very long election. It was supposed to happen several months ago. And we've had a very long, healthy conversation. And I'm excited to see who the members of the DSCC pick.
All right. Winners
on September 12th.
September 12th. So we're 9 days away. And you have made it known that you really like Katie Bernhardt a lot. Why?
Well, Katie has been a true friend of mine for several years, and we have a lot in common. Some people don't seem to think it matters or is a qualification, but Katie's raised four children while expanding a very successful business and going to law school. I actually think that proves that she has the chops to do the financial work that our party really needs to be more successful. I want to say that I've worked with Linda and Katie on three statewide campaigns, both of them. They're incredibly talented women. I'm very proud of the slate of candidates we have. I had a disappointment even that Representative James decided to drop out. And I think we need more people like this. And Dylan said earlier that we need more people like this. We need a deeper bench. I happen to think that Katie has the connections to be able to do the recruitment that we really need and the fundraising that we really need.
All right. Well, we have Catherine from Lafayette. I don't know if this is Katie who's running or not, but Catherine in Lafayette, you have the floor. Good morning.
Yeah, no, it's not Katie Bernhardt. I am an attorney in Lafayette, in her hometown, and I'd like to clarify something. At the beginning, you said that Katie is an attorney. She is not an attorney. She graduated.
You're right.
From
She's
law
a graduate school. Of a Louisiana law school. She's I appreciate the correction.
Okay.
Well, it's been repeated many times, and I don't understand why she hasn't corrected it, because she has an ethical obligation to do so, and she hasn't. And I would like to ask Mary. Do you realize that while you were working for John Bel Edwards' initial campaign, and so was Linda Woolard working to get Edwards elected, that Katie Bernhardt donated $1,000 to Scott Angel?
All right. Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah, I do actually realize that there's a lot of Republicans in Louisiana who used to be Democrats, and Scott Angel's among them. I certainly can't speak to Katie's personal contribution history, but I can speak to her history as a donor. She's donated to many of the candidates that I've worked for and others that I haven't. And, many of them are still Democrats, still hanging on. And I think we really need whoever wins. And I think Linda will be capable of doing this, too. We need them to understand why people are leaving the party and how to get them back, how to meet them where they are.
A couple of questions from listeners. Hal in Monroe asks about any relationship between Katie and Jim Bernhardt, who used to be the chair. They don't even spell their name the same way. Are they related?
I'm relatively sure they are unrelated.
Okay. They're both from the same neck of the woods, too. Katie has an extra letter, a T, at the end of Bernhardt. But another listener says, getting to what Catherine and Lafayette alluded to, the Republican Party spends a lot of effort trying to get Democrats to join their party, and they've been somewhat successful in this. But Democrats spend almost no effort trying to get Republicans to join the Democratic fold. Why not?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's no time spent. I think it's not a very visible part of the time spent. And I think that if you have any association with anyone who happens to have an R behind their name and you're an internal kind of party hack, kind of committed all the time person, you get calls like the last one we just had. It's not encouraged. We're not encouraged to meet voters where they are, to persuade them. And I certainly don't think we should be making people feel comfortable with values that we don't share. But we have to stay engaged with them for sure.
But Matt says it was in the Democratic Party press release that Katie is an attorney. Her husband's an attorney, right?
I don't know. I haven't seen any press releases from the party. But her husband is an attorney, and she's a graduate of a Louisiana law school. I have never heard herself refer to her as an attorney. I think a lot of these like back and forth have really made the Democratic Party look bad. They've made it look like we think this is a student council race instead of something serious. And I know Linda and Katie take it very seriously. So, that's what I do too.
But it's good. Information is good. I suspect few people in Baton Rouge know that the congressman who represents this district, did not go to LSU. He went to the University of Alabama, Garrett Graves. And he does not have a college degree, neither does Clay Higgins, who's been in the news of late. I think we're the only state in America with two members of the U.S. House without college degrees. We'll talk more with Mary Patricia Ray, and we'll also hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. Your number 877-217-5757. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Did he really? This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're going to be joined by Mark Ballard in short order, but we're spending a few more minutes with Mary Patricia Ray, and we'd like to keep her around, and I think she'll do it about the discussion regarding mail-in voting. But a few more minutes on the future of the Democratic Party, which, let's face it, is reeling statewide. Now, Democrats are winning elections in cities, and most of the big cities, all but Lafayette, are Democratic strongholds. But and when it comes to statewide voting, different kind of story. John Bel Edwards, the only Democrat in statewide office, and he barely won against a guy who had never run for office before. Last year, 40,000 votes separated him and Eddie Rasponi. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Mary Patricia.
Yeah, good morning. Listen, I'm not thrilled about voting for Joe Biden or looking forward to 8 years of him as president, but I'm a loyal Democrat, and I'm going to hold my nose and do it. Are the party candidates going to come through Louisiana? They don't seem like they have.
Well, the electoral votes are probably not at stake here. We know Donald Trump's going to carry Louisiana, and we know Joe Biden's going to carry California and New York, so think about California with one-eighth of the American population, and we'll get no visits from candidates. It's obscene, and this is a product, Mary Patricia, of the Electoral College.
Yeah, and there are purists in both parties, I think, that would say, if the candidate's not good enough for you, why do you want him to come here? But, you know, the truth is that we should encourage, whatever party you're in, you should encourage party building, and the candidate's presence and the state and interest in it is important. If they're not here and they're not visible, we can't build. So, you know, I've been disappointed by what I've seen out there over the last few weeks in terms of people not being willing to hold their nose ever. No such thing as compromise. Everyone, it's their way or the highway. That is certainly not how Democrats are going to win elections in Louisiana. And we can certainly do it without sacrificing our principles, but we've got to work together.
Greg in Shreveport. Greg, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. I would, my comments would be, and maybe it's a question, but, you know, we've for the last several years, we've run our state party, in my opinion, on a D.C. agenda. And while I can appreciate a little of that, that just doesn't sell.
All right. What about the Democratic Party nationally not being in line with the Democratic Party in Louisiana?
Well, I spent the last 2 days on a commercial shoot, actually, in Bossier City, Shreveport, and part south of there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a debate about whether it is okay to meet voters where they are and bring them along. And I think that it is okay. There are people who disagree with me. I think there's a way to do it without, like I said, sacrificing your principles. And we should not have a carbon copy of Washington, D.C. talking points in Louisiana for either party, because this is Louisiana. So, yeah, that's my answer. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Mike in Opelousas. Mike, you're on with Mary Patricia Ray.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. We were talking about the Democratic Party in Louisiana, and I think that's wonderful. I did want to remind everybody that John Bel Edwards actually ran on a platform where he spoke about the importance of raising the minimum wage in Louisiana. And so far, I've noticed that he's failed to really push that. And what I'd like to see the governor and many of the Democratic Party is really hammer that issue home, as well as not only raising the minimum wage in Louisiana, but also a Medicare for all single payer program, even though that may be, you know, Washington, D.C., linked up during the national pandemic, in which Louisiana was absolutely devastated by. I can tell you, my family and friends around me are really advocating and really hurting for something along those lines. And I'd really like to see the Democratic Party in Louisiana not take any corporate money and really stand on the side of working families.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for that call. And I guess, you know, that brings to mind the coming special session that we're likely to see in October, where our heavily red legislature is going to make decisions about how to spend that COVID-19 money that we're going to receive theoretically, and how they're going to hold Louisiana taxpayers and businesses accountable for their share of what we're going through. And so I guess it means elections matter. Elections matter. And if we don't do well in them, then we can make all the promises we want and put all the bullet points we want on the paper, but they don't happen.
All right. Ethan in New Orleans. Ethan, you're on the air with Mary Patricia Ray. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call, Jim.
Thank you.
I just had a question in terms of redistricting. I know that's an important issue in terms of all statewide elections, and I just wanted to get Mayor Patricia's view. Based on what we saw in the legislature this year, what do you think we should expect in terms of redistricting next year and how that will affect all these elections?
Well, I would expect that we are going to have to see Democratic legislators work with Republican legislators in order to come up with something that resembles even close to an ethical redistricting and a legal redistricting. And that belies this entire conversation we've been having about being unwilling to work with anyone or talk to anyone or be associated with anyone who doesn't outwardly agree with you 100% of the time. So I think we have some great legislative leadership, including people like Representative Ted James and the 11 senators who have endorsed Katie Bernhardt for party chair, 11 of 12 Democratic senators who are going to do that work. And if they're criticized by Democrats, it will be unfortunate because they're going to have to do it.
Philip Gould, one of our favorite listeners in the Lafayette area, he says, Katie, I believe, is Jim Bernhardt's daughter.
I think her...
Phillip's probably right. Her dad's name is Jim, but the other Jim Bernhardt, who I was referring to, former Democratic Party chair, is the guy who ran the Shaw Group and now runs Bernhardt Capital.
Katie's father was a prolific Democratic donor, leader, activist, and worker who raised her in the party and unfortunately is not around anymore. And one of the most disgusting things I've seen over the past few weeks is people implying that when she talks about donations that she made after her father's death to candidates that he traditionally supported, that somehow that's a cop-out. And I actually think that defending your father's legacy is never a cop-out and shows a lot of character.
Okay. Final call for Mary Patricia, who will be with us for a while, but we're going to get Mark Ballard on right after James and Metairie. James, you're on the air, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Jim. I listened to a little bit of your first guest, and then I had the breakaway, and then the guest that you have on now. And the question is, how do the Democrats get more Democrats elected to statewide office in Louisiana?
How do they do that?
Well, they're going to have to accept that not all Democrats are pro-choice. Not all Democrats want to ban all guns. Not all Democrats want to do these things that some Democrats want to do. And they're going to have to support people for better or for worse that are a bridge to the place that they want to go. I think there's some confusion about where they want to go, and they need to be willing to sit down and talk about it and work it out, because if they're just going to deny support or recognition to the, for instance, the John Bel Edwardses of the world, they don't have a bridge to somewhere better for them in Louisiana. And I'm saying them because I respect the work of these activists in the party, and I recognize that I don't engage on that level, and I hope that they will engage on that level with everyone who wants to be a Democrat.
All right, and we will strive to get Linda Woolert and Katie Bernhardt on the show. Mark Ballard is with us, the Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Every Sunday he writes Political Horizons, and his column of last Sunday is one of the most talked about in his newspaper in a while. The title, The Trouble with States Mail-In Balloting. I'll read the first few graphs. Like Louisiana Secretary of State Kyle Ardoin, every election day, my wife and I made a point of walking to our precinct. Ardoin gets misty-eyed, so do I when describing that patriotic feeling of physically casting a vote. When Donna Britt, my wife of 39 years, contracted ALS 3 years ago, we kept up the ritual best we could until COVID-19. Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, is a progressive nervous system disease that robs the person of immunity protection as well as muscular control, leaving the afflicted mentally sharp and sentient but unable to write, speak, or even sit up on their own. Since late February, doctors, nurses, and the hospice team formed a cocoon to keep her away from the fast-spreading and sometimes lethal coronavirus mutation. Her disability has made mail-in voting during the pandemic a lot less abstract than partisan, claims that expansion of mail ballots will lead to widespread fraud or refusal to allow more mail-in votes will amount to voter suppression. So Mark Ballard starting this way, and it's a very personal issue for him. And as a columnist, he goes places he would not as a reporter. And Mark, I know you are very concerned not only about Donna, but about others who may not be able to cast their ballots this November 3rd.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically what I was trying to point out is that, you know, even with drop that whole battle that's going on nationwide and in our state as well, forget about that, but the existing rules create a number of hurdles. Not necessarily, I mean, they're not that burdensome. I mean, but we come from a state that has a history of creating hurdles for people to vote. And that goes back to Mike Foster's grandfather, who passed laws that basically disenfranchised the black population and much of the low-income whites. And it, all the way up, this seems to be kind of a remnant of, you know, not necessarily burdensome, but a bunch of hurdles that we have to go through and that she has to go through and can't without my help.
So. Well, she probably doesn't miss many elections.
No, we were one MP with you call them fives or something. It's people that are chronic voters. That's what we
I
did.
I just call them chronic voters. Yeah. You don't even have to be a five to get there. But I'm positive you guys are super chronic.
Well,
yes.
Well, we have this consternation about mail-in voting, and Trey Orso yesterday, and the Advocate wrote an op-ed piece saying that the current plan from the Secretary's office reduces early voting to 10 days from 13 days allotted in July. So will the voters be suppressed? We'll talk about it more with Mark and Mary Patricia. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're discussing mail-in voting and the controversy over what will happen in our state, a collision between the Secretary of State and the governor, and it's headed for court. Mark Ballard of The Advocate is with us, also Mary Patricia Ray, political strategist. And, Mark, you noted in your column that hearings are slated next week, September 8th and 9th, that would be Tuesday and Wednesday, in a lawsuit filed by three voters, the NAACP, and the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice. It's before Federal Judge Shelley Dick of Baton Rouge. What do you think?
Well, I think that it's all going to boil down. They're asking for a preliminary injunction, basically to stop Kyle Ordoin's plan from going into effect, but that's effectively been done when the governor said he wasn't going to support it. So I guess the next step back is having Judge Dick kind of decide what the plan is, how expansive mail-in balloting is going to be. And I think that's where we're going to be going. We've got a long history of partisans being unable to come up with any sort of plan and dumping it into the federal courts. We have a long history of that as well, and I think that's where we've gone with this one.
Doug on Corsi. Doug, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. Even with the history, you know, what's happening here is very striking, because the right to vote, obviously, is one of our critical institutions, and it's being corrupted and debased along with the U.S. Census, the U.S. Postal Service, Centers for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, and the list, and the Department of Justice. And all of these are meant to serve the American people, and the people who are corrupting and debasing them are doing it to serve Donald Trump. And that's the case with this voting problem, too. We can't forget that.
All right. Are these partisan matters? It would seem they are, but should partisanship affect logic? What do you think, Mark?
It does. I mean, in the political world, partisanship ends up trumping most everything. And I think that this is a partisan fight over two different views of a single procedure.
Mary Patricia, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Mark is a wise editorial writer, and so he gets to really say his opinion. Something I would love to do that sometimes. But yeah, no, he's right. Partisanship is going to trump logic here.
And Mary Patricia is a lawyer.
Nope, I am also just a graduate.
I've got
just
it wrong
a graduate
today.
Of a Louisiana law school. Just
Just to graduate.
Although I happen to think that if I had done it while raising three and a half, four children, I might still get some respect for it, especially from the women out there. But
a few weeks ago, you might have been able to say you couldn't take the bar exam because of COVID.
There you go. Yeah. Coulda.
It's an open book test.
There you go.
Okay. Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Mark Ballard talked about hurdles when it comes to mail-in voting. I would call those safeguards, is to make sure that people like his wife who do have a condition, they obviously can mail vote, but it doesn't allow everyone, because what about the influence? You know, when you go to vote, you're in a curtain. No one can see what you're doing. No one can persuade you a certain way. I remember years ago I walked in with a McCain Palin T-shirt, and they said, take the shirt off. I didn't know. You know, I was ignorant. I was young back then. The reason why we go to vote in person is to prevent outside forces from influencing the voter, like churches. What if they're going to – they make all their parishioners vote a certain way, and then they mail them in. There's a reason why we vote in person, and we have a curtain, and we're able to do a secret ballot.
All right. Is that valid, Mark? Patrick's concerns?
I think it is over concern about safeguards. First off, we're not talking about, I believe, 2% of the voters voted absentee in the primary. I mean, it could have been 9%, but we're still not talking. We're talking about a small numbers of votes. And then, in my mind, you get a ballot, right, when you ask for one. And when we go to the precinct, we ask to vote, and we sign in for it. And if you get a ballot, you get a ballot, and then that's it. I mean, I've gone to churches where the ministers try their very best, their level-headed best, to have us vote one way, persuade us to vote one way or the other. That's all part of the campaign season. I'm not sure that – what are we safeguarding? You know, I think that perhaps we've gone a little too far in security.
I thought we had separation of church and state in this country, but sometimes that's blurred. But the president of the United States, who votes by mail, by the way, yesterday made a bizarre statement, and listen to it. Matt's got it ready. And it sounds like he is advocating to vote twice, to vote by mail and then go to the polls and vote again, which, of course, would be a felony. But here's our president.
On your ballots, if you get the unsolicited ballots, send it in and then go make sure it counted. And if it doesn't tabulate, you vote. You just vote. And then if they calculate it very late, which they shouldn't be doing, they'll see you voted, and so it won't count. So send it in early, and then go and vote. And if it's not tabulated, you vote, and the vote is going to count. You can't let them take your vote away.
Send it in early, and then go and vote. Now,
sounds like an Edwin Edwards vote early. Edwin Edwards vote early and often.
That was John Breaux, actually.
There you go.
yeah.
An even better...
But I think Bro was joking. I don't think the president was joking.
Well, I don't think he was joking, but you want to know what and I don't want to take up Mark's time, because this is such a great column. And part of the reason that it's great is that the same people who might be inclined to be persuaded by a Donald Trump about voting or, mail voting being a bad thing, it puts a face and a name on this that people recognize, so they can understand. So that, especially rural voters that, tend to be more supportive of Donald Trump can understand what this is really about. And I really appreciated the column.
And just as Matt was playing that cut from Donald Trump, Bill Huey writes, please ask Mark what he thinks of the president telling people to vote twice to test the system. Mark, sounded like the president was serious, just as he was a year ago when he said, Russia, are you listening? Are you listening? Let's dump some emails from Hillary Clinton. And sure enough, that happened.
Well, I mean,
4 years ago,
I didn't get to hear. It didn't actually come across that well for me. But what he actually said. But I'm disappointed, and not trying to say what I've back one way or the other. But I have been disappointed in the president trying to turn voting into a partisan issue.
Okay. Now, another listener asked, this is Tracy at the Capitol, about the disability program that requires enrollment. You alluded to this in your column. What all do you have to do to enroll in the disability program?
Okay. Well, and as I noted in my column, that it is so the instructions are very complex and vague, but here's my understanding of it, is that you have to have a handicap ID card or Social Security disability documentation. Well, Donna has neither of those, and so she has to go to the doctor, and the doctor has to write a note. And in addition to writing a note, he has to sign a certification. So that was two trips to the doctor. And then when she signs the application to which these two pieces of these documents are attached, I can't sign for her, as I have the legal right to do, but she has to make her own mark, which means that she has to be witnessed by two people coming into the house and who are into an area that's supposed to be cocooned from the outside. And then I have to, well, I don't have to. I mean, we could put it in the mail, but I will take it to the voter registration's office where I have to show my identification and sign attesting that this is the application that she filed. And then we get the ballot, and then we have to have two more witnesses come in and sign for the ballot when she actually makes her vote. And again, taking it back to deliver it to the voter registration, I've got to sign attesting that this is the ballot. I mean, it just is a lot of, you know, it's like a quest more than a right. You know?
Okay. Jim downtown. Jim, good morning. You're on with Mark. Hi, Jim.
Hi. In 1982, they reauthorized the Voting Rights Act, and I worked on some amendments that give disabled people the right to have anybody assist them in voting, and that's now in the law. I don't understand how this can circumvent that. Also, I called in to find out. I voted for the first time by mail last election in July. I called in to find out if I'm going to get a ballot mailed to me, and nobody in the registrar's office could tell me that.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Mark?
Well, one part is that when she could go out, we actually, you know, we walked to the precinct at St. Joseph's Academy, past Congressman Graves' house, and we did it in her wheelchair, and because she couldn't press any buttons, they allowed me to actually press the buttons for her in the voting machine itself. Well, she can no longer go out, and so that's when we started into this disabled program for the mail-in ballot.
All right. Bill Bryan, formerly the Deputy Attorney General in charge of elections, says in Louisiana, your ballot cannot be counted if the vote is cast on a ballot for which you did not apply. The law clearly lays out the process. So that's another reason why the integrity of the ballot is, according to most, not impaired dramatically by mail-in voting. But that's an argument we're going to have, and it could affect the outcome of the election, and some people believe that's what this is all about.
Well, yeah.
Well, Mark, we'll talk more about this next week, I'm sure, and best to you and Donna. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for that call, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay safe and stay tuned.